Okay, we're doing it.
We are recording on the spur of the moment.
The 15th.
15th? 15th episode.
Welcome to Read Comics.
This is Marty.
Florence.
And Jason. And we just kind of decided, hey, should we record tonight? Yeah, what the hell?
Jason was talking about Robert Kirkman.
Yes, well, that's what everyone was talking about for the last couple weeks, and we're probably coming in on the tail end of it, but we might as well share our thoughts. Marty and I have both seen the Robert Kirkman video. Florence has not, so I was going to explain to Florence a little bit about what he said in this video, which was right after the San Diego Comic-Con. He put this video online that was a call to comic creators, specifically the ones working for Marvel and DC, the ones who had kind of, you know, become successful at Marvel and DC. Not necessarily like the mega wonders or whatever, you know, but yeah, kind of. Basically, like, he's calling Brian Michael Bendis and Ed Brubaker and Geoff Johns and all these people to quit working for Marvel and DC and do creator-owned stuff.
Okay.
And for Marvel and DC to hire no-name people and to focus their books not on adult comic readers, but to focus it on the next generation. And specifically, not necessarily kids, but young people. Kids, young teenagers, excuse me, getting them to go and buy comics. Say, Marvel and DC should be getting 12-year-olds to buy comics.
So they're like the feeder system, and then when you grow up, you can seek out the creator-owned sophisticated
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly. And there's... He framed this recording in a, I'm going to, if we follow this, we will save comics. And, you know, basically he kind of put himself in everyone's face a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of pushback. You basically have two camps where you have half of the people saying, no, this is great. He's right on the ball. He's a genius. Why hasn't anyone thought of this before? Except that's not really the case. I mean, people have thought of this before. And you have other people who are like, screw you, Robert Kirkman. I want to write Spider-Man. I want to draw Spider-Man. Get out of here.
Yeah.
So, and he also is basically saying that if you are Brian Michael Bendis and you have Powers, which is your creator-owned work, and you're also writing The Avengers, people are going to buy The Avengers over Powers. But if you're Brian Michael Bendis and you stop writing Avengers and people like you, they have to buy Powers because that's all you get. So that's why he's saying, I want you to quit working for Marvel and just...
For your own good?
For the good of the industry.
Hmm.
And also for your own good in that if you have your own creator-owned stuff, it's yours. It will make you money for the rest of your life. Whereas if you work for Marvel or DC, if you...
You have a salary, but...
You have a salary, but you know what? When they're done with you, you're done. And they don't have a retirement plan. There's no pensions. You better be saving your pennies, because when you're done, you're done.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much what he was saying. And my own opinion about it is that I think that creator-owned stuff is great, and I love to read authors, and specifically writers, and he was specifically talking to creators, not really fans so much, but creators,
sure,
that I love a lot of their creator-owned stuff. Not everything, but, you know, that's personal taste. But as far as Marvel and DC being a feeder system, I think there are so many other things that need to be done with comics to get kids to read comics again. than Marvel and DC focusing their comics on a youth market.
Well, and they have so many titles. I mean, really, the idea of them turning every single one of them to a young-centered, you know, without the star writers, like, it's hard to imagine that actually matching the new readership they could pull in.
Well,
you know, like, would the numbers really add up? Would they be able to just turn, like, a switch and get that many young people to start paying $3-4 a pop?
Well, and that's exactly it. That's one of the things right there, is I have to think back about me starting to read comics and collecting comics when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. Before I get into that, though, I want to know what Marty thought. He watched the video as well. And I want to know your thoughts about it.
Yeah,
I'm specifically thinking of one of your thoughts, was what you told me about the video and audio quality. Not necessarily quality, but more of the...
I'm not sure what you're fishing for, but my initial impression was just that it was kind of boring.
Yes, that's
and
the one.
Also that, I mean, it had clearly been edited, but I wouldn't have known from listening to the audio. It's like you had to watch, and you could see the little jumps, but just but so subtle.
Because
you know,
he didn't move around.
It was just him standing there, and he was not gesturing or, like, you know, really, you know, he wasn't moving.
How long
was it? And it was, like, 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think, I don't even know if I watched the whole thing, to be honest. I did skip to the end, and I definitely watched the end. I think I remember, you know, skipping a couple minutes or something in the middle, going, well, when does it get to the good part? Like... But it kind of felt to me too like, well, duh. I didn't really feel like he was saying all this revolutionary stuff. Personally, I thought he was just saying, well, this is what would, you know, be helpful. And I kind of thought, duh.
Well, one of the things that it reminded me of actually was someone who won an Oscar a few years ago, and during his acceptance speech, put out a call to artists to create things. It doesn't matter what. If you to write, to draw, to film, to do whatever, but do creative things. And I don't remember who that was now, but it was a few years ago, and it was an Oscar winner during his acceptance speech.
Isn't there somebody like that every year?
This was very... specific, that he was saying, you know, that I'm putting out a call to everyone who, to create things, to, instead of destroying things, create things, create new works of art. And that's kind of what it made me think a little bit about. He just kind of framed it poorly, I thought.
Well, I mean, we saw him speak at Wizard World, and I thought it was very charming.
And that's the thing, like, it was very different. Like,
yeah.
He was speaking in a much more directed and, like, very serious way. You know, I almost feel like after Jason and I have given our impression, we should pause it. Florence will watch the video, and then we'll get her impression.
We could do that. I mean, we have the technology.
We're going to do it. We'll be right back after this moment. Okay, we're back.
All right, and I actually watched the entire thing start to finish, which I didn't think I would do. I found it fascinating. I think he's very articulate. Certainly not nearly as animated and funny as he was during the thing that we
That's
saw, but it's possible that I have a lot of goodwill for him and I'm interested in what he has to say. That being said, I don't think he's right. I mean, and I'm not even sure I agree with his goal. His stated goal is to bring comics back to the way they once were. And I think with the proliferation of entertainment options, it'll never, like, nothing's ever going to consolidate back to bring one form of entertainment, one media, to dominance the way it was for kids with comics back in the day. And
well,
there's just too many other options.
You're thinking
now.
Of, like, the 40s and 50s?
Yeah, I mean,
like,
that's what I was
I
hearing from him.
I don't think that's what he's saying. I think he's just saying that we need to have a young adult audience, and right now, we don't have a young adult audience. We have, like, Marvel and DC, who are obviously the biggest sellers, catering to, you know, us, the adults.
Yeah, I know, I definitely see that point. But I have to say, I was brought into liking comics. I mean, okay, yes, they were around the house when I was little. But when I personally, like, actually went out and made an effort, it was when I was in high school, and it was when I read Sandman. So it was exactly that adult complexity darkness that I made me want to ever read that
totally.
And made me become the person I am now, which, you know, spends a lot of money on those books.
Well, I think back to when I started buying comics, and like I said before, 10, 11, or 12, and I didn't have any older siblings or cousins or anybody who had comics that I would read of theirs and that got me interested in comics. When I was that age, comics were everywhere. They were in every drugstore. They were in every 7-Eleven. They were in the supermarket. You know, you had the spinner racks that had everything from Superman and Batman and X-Men and et cetera to Richie Rich to Archie Comics. You had, they were everywhere. This was in the early 80s, and they cost, I think at that time they cost 50 cents an issue.
Yeah,
now,
see, I think that's more relevant.
And that's exactly what I'm thinking, is that why, they did not have Marvel Adventures back then. If you wanted a kid's comic, that was Richie Rich. That was Archie. Marvel and DC didn't have kids' comics at the time. The closest that they had around that time was Power Pack had just come out, which was kind of the 80s Runaways comic. Mm-hmm. It was their comic that had kids as the cast. They weren't Runaways. They were four brothers and sisters that, you know, had superpowers. I love Power Pack because they were my age. But I was reading, you know, the various other comics as well. The, you know, New Mutants, Teen Titans. New Mutants was also one of my favorite. That was a teen group of superheroes, mutants. It was, you know, a tie into the X-Men and stuff. And they didn't have a separate line of comics for young people. They had their comics. And there are all these arguments that are out today about how comics aren't, that kids are not interested in comics the way they weren't to because.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's too much continuity. That I call bullshit on that. I mean, the thing is that when I was a kid, there was still, I mean, maybe there wasn't 40 years of continuity, but there was 20 years of continuity. And if I came in to comics at that age, didn't know a whole lot about the X-Men. My first real introduction to the X-Men was in Marvel Secret Wars, where all these groups came to the Secret Wars planet and battled it out, and there were the X-Men there. I didn't know who any of them were, but I still enjoyed reading the comic, and I started getting X-Men shortly after that, and I just jumped in and caught up with the story. And at that time, I didn't have Wikipedia to go and look shit up. And at that time, I didn't have lots of reprints of back issues that I would have access to. I couldn't go and get the Essential X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
I had to just dive in to the deep end of the pool and sink or swim. And I swam. And so so did all of my friends who were also 12 years old and were reading X-Men or Batman or whatever, Justice League. You know, we were reading them and we just figured it out.
Well,
we were
certain,
smart enough to
right.
figure it out.
There's a certain amount of imagination that triggers too, of like, well, I'm not quite sure what's going on here. You know, I think it might be because this, or, you know, that there is a condescension into thinking, like, you have to be entirely spoon-fed in order to be able to grasp it.
But that is the society that we are in nowadays, and that's almost what we have this expectation of. Especially as adults, we have an expectation of it. I think of, like, when Buffy was on, and I was watching Buffy regularly, and my roommates knew that Tuesday night was Buffy night, And occasionally they would come in and watch with me, which I kind of was two minds about because on the one hand, I'm like, oh, this is great. I'll have someone to watch Buffy with. And on the other hand, they wanted to interrupt me every 2 seconds to ask me what was going on.
Yep.
Which I didn't, you know, I wanted to tell them, but I didn't want to keep doing it during the show,
yeah.
You know? And they kind of got, like, frustrated and wouldn't watch anymore. And Buffy was very continuity-laden.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it's like, so are soap operas, and they get new viewers all the time.
Yep.
What?
The soap operas are very continuity-laden.
Yeah.
And they
get new viewers all the time? How many viewers do soap operas really get?
I think they're going strong. I mean, there's several
every
single day.
They're on during the day in the afternoons when no one watches TV.
Well, there's still
a
lot of
people who
there's still a lot of
home during the day.
Yeah, people who are at home during the day.
But by a lot, you mean like, you know, tiny percentages, like 2% of the people that watch at night. Like, if you looked at numbers and statistics, and that's why soap operas don't have, you know, it's a very, like, low prestige, like, you know, people who are on soap operas are not, like, celebrities.
Well, they are in certain worlds, certain circles.
And there are people who are considered
soap. Do you know that Nathan Fillion got his start on One Life to Live?
Yeah, but did I watch any of that?
But I knew that, and was
so.
But I'm just saying that
you only know that because he was in Firefly, a show that was on during prime time, and still got canceled because it wasn't.
There
know,
are
getting
people
enough
who do watch soap operas,
yes.
And there are new people who start watching it. You
we watch
right
it
now,
in college.
The biggest growth is college students who may have time during the day to watch them. It used to be housewives. They were aimed at housewives.
Right.
Now, granted, there are a lot fewer housewives than there used to be. But they're still in the air. They still keep making them. And they wouldn't stop. They wouldn't keep making them if their audience kept shrinking year by year by year. And I'm not saying it's growing, but I'm saying that there is the thing that comics is lacking right now where they are getting replacement viewers, whereas comics, and this is his argument, that comics are not getting the replacement audience.
I would argue that that audience is going to video games at this point. That's where all the...
Well, that's just it. There were video games when I was a kid, although they weren't the 30-hour, 40-hour, 50-hour online endless
video games. I was just
going to say,
what about the online endless ones?
Yeah, they weren't those video games. But there were video games and, you know, there was television, there were all these things that were competing. Now, my biggest thing, I think, really is that we have pushed comic books into a place where kids can't find them anymore. That is the biggest thing, is that the main comics, not the Marvel Adventures that are sold to supermarkets that talk down to kids like he was talking about, but the main Marvel Universe, DC Universe comics that used to be in every drugstore aren't in every drugstore anymore. They're not in the grocery stores. They're not in the convenience stores. Kids can't find them because the only place that they have them is in comic book stores. That when I was a kid and I wanted to go to a comic book store, my mom would always check it out first to make sure that it was a place where she felt comfortable for me going to.
It wasn't really just a head shop.
Exactly, exactly. It wasn't going to be a place where she didn't want to leave her 12-year-old son unattended. So, and that's... When I went on Wednesday after work to my comic shop to get comics, because of the video, I kind of looked at the comics I was getting, which were all Marvel and DC stuff, mostly DC stuff, but, you know. And
it's a big week for Avatar for me.
I looked at who was in the shop buying the comics, and I'm like, you know what? There was no one under the age of 20 at the racks on that day, and actually most of them, oh, I hate to say it, but were kind of freaky looking. I mean, a lot of them looked like they didn't...
Like you and me?
I am far more socially acceptable than a lot of people that were there that Wednesday night. I don't know about you, but... Anyway.
Did you see how they had racks outside?
Yes, for
they
the state fair.
State fair sale. Five for 25, or five for a dollar. And
did you buy a bunch?
Florence let me look, and I ended up looking for about an hour, and
yeah,
came home with a stack, probably 4 inches of comics.
Did you get, there were these square bound ones that were some sort of techno, I don't remember what it's called.
I don't think I saw that.
Oh, they were ones I specifically was like, oh, I bet Marty would like these. They were like science fiction anthology comics.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see those at all.
And they were square bound, and there were like five of them.
Huh, no, I didn't see those. I looked and didn't really see anything I really wanted, but saw a bunch of stuff like, I would buy that, but I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
And then, like, 5 minutes later, I had this huge stack, but I didn't go back and get the ones that I thought, like, you know, oh, I would buy those if I were buying comics right now.
Yeah.
And I ended up, one thing we got all of was something by Michael Straczynski, like the Book of Lost Souls, I think.
Hmm.
And we haven't read that. And then Florence had borrowed that other Michael Straczynski series from Mike,
Rising Stars.
But his collection ends at 18, and the series actually only goes to 24.
Okay.
So I found 19, 20, 21, and 22 there, and then inside they had 24 for, you know, like $350, and the no 23. So today we bought 23 on eBay.
Nice. See, there was an eBay when I was 12. If I missed an issue, it was done.
Yep.
It was gone. I mean, you had to find the place that would have the back issues and see if you could afford it and save up your money to kind of get the set and everything. It wasn't as easy now as it was back then, yet people say it's too hard now, and that's why kids can't do it. I think that kids are just not given the opportunity.
Well, yeah, and that's what it's, I think you're absolutely right that it's not about the difficulty. I mean, I was reading Lord of the Rings,
you
know, in third grade. I don't think that...
Exactly,
you know,
exactly.
I have yet to read a comic that complicated. But anyway, so, I mean, I think you're absolutely right that it's scarcity and, you know, availability, having it in front of you. Like, you know, yeah, I didn't see... I mean, I never bought comics as a kid, but I do remember them being around. I remember seeing them. Certainly a lot more than I see them now.
Yep.
And now I seek them out and buy them.
Well, and I think if a call is made to Marvel and DC to focus on the youth market, what they should do is not have comics that are written specifically for the youth market. Just that those two companies that are backed by however much business is behind them to slash the prices on their superhero line of comics.
I don't think they can afford to do that.
Well, I don't know.
I would be surprised.
Maybe not considering that comics are only in the comic shops, but if comics were back in every grocery store, if they had spinner racks in the drugstores.
Right, but I mean, you're going to have to convince, you know, distributors to do that first.
Well, and that's the thing, is that right now distribution is handled by one company, whereas before it wasn't just handled by one company. It was handled...
Does Diamond handle, like, you know, grocery stores? I would be surprised if they do.
Well, okay, you're right. Diamond handles the comic shops, and the ones that... the Marvel Adventures that you do find in Walmart and Target are handled by not news distributors, but by, I think,
Like magazine distributors?
I would almost even say book distributors.
Yeah, no, that could be. And, I mean, the interesting thing, too, about all this is I feel like it really... Honestly, this is, like, ignoring the trade phenomenon.
Like, well, but what feeds the trades right now? Single issues. And if single issues
go away... Yeah, but if trades are selling 1,000 times more than single issues, which it sounds like they are, like, well, who the fuck cares? Just come out with trades.
Yeah, but...
You know, it takes longer to do, but so what?
But you're talking about that means that there won't be a new issue of X comic every month. There'll just be a new trade every 6 months.
Do I care?
Well, I mean, if there was no single issue, why would a trade take that long?
Well, I mean, there's still
take the same amount of time to
the
make.
The content, you know, right. The length of it.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think that's inherent. I think that could, if the entire structure of the business changed, I don't see why they couldn't, you know,
speed the artists up. I don't think that's how it works.
Have them do fewer projects at once and do more.
If that were the issue, but I think most artists really only do, like, I mean, I shouldn't say most, but I think most of the time the idea is that an artist has a single comic that they work on every day and they, you know, churn out pages for. It takes a month, you know, or more to do
22 pages for a comic.
Yeah.
God, I'm sorry, my throat keeps drying up as I'm...
You are kind of,
raspy?
Going on.
Well,
you're getting a little animated there.
So another train of thought that I had was, in the 90s, there was a surge of not just creator-owned, but creator-published works.
Yeah.
And that has really died out again.
Yeah.
To a large extent.
Well, the problem with the 90s is that was when Image first started, was in the 90s. And you had all these... The late 80s... was a very artist-dominated time for superhero comics. It was the age of the superstar artist. And a lot of the artists were feeling that they were getting ripped off by the major publishers. And so they're like, we're going to start our own comic company. And that was Image. And they came out with Spawn, they came out with Wildstorm, they came out with Wildcats, they came out with Savage Dragon, all these... And what it was kind of discovered was that while these comics had great quote-unquote artists, quote-unquote on the great, you know, artists, not all of these artists could necessarily write real well for extended periods of time. You know, yes, Todd McFarlane was able to write and draw Spawn for a while, but then was he able to continue that long, open-ended story line very well? Was his writing that good? And a lot of people felt it wasn't. So, you know, he would hire writers to work on Spawn, and these people that he hired to write and then later to draw Spawn were like, hey, you're ripping us off! So, you know, it kind of ended up reaching this kind of weird state where Marvel went bankrupt for a while. And so many people got out of comics because they just didn't care about the stories anymore. And a lot of that was because they did not have the decent writers at that point.
So, I mean, I think encouraging the most successful writers to... abandoned Marvel, I think, is not going to be good for Marvel.
Well, exactly. And, I mean, but Kirkman doesn't work for Marvel anymore.
No, good point. So that was another train of thought for me was how different really is Image? Working for Image versus working for Marvel.
Well, and the idea is that everything for Image is creator-owned, that if you have a comic idea, you form a team, you have a writer, you have an artist, and you go to Image and say, we'd like you to publish our comic, and their model is that they're like, okay, this is how much it's going to cost to put out your comic, to promote it, to distribute it, to print it, we will take that much plus a little extra to pay for our staff, and you get whatever else there is. And apparently I have found out that there are a number of Image comics that are put out that barely pay for themselves, that may not actually end up making the creators of these creator-owned comics any money at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which ones? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't, but I'm guessing.
I doubt they're the.
Well, I'm guessing that they're the ones that get published, you know, that are a four-issue run, and
mm-hmm.
then you never hear anything else about them. You know, it's not the ones that Kirkman does. It's not Invincible. It's not Walking Dead. It's probably not Ferber's. What's the one about the family? Noble Causes.
Oh.
You know, it's not those, but it's the ones that is a four-issue run, and that's it. But on the other hand, you do get to keep the movie rights, which, you know, you may get a $30,000 or $40,000, $50,000 option for a movie that never ends up getting made. And that'll keep you for a year.
Okay, so segue here. I just read the newest issue of Runaways, which is now being written by Terry Moore.
Yep.
And I have to say, I really wish this had been a creator-owned comic that had only been written by the original creator and no one else. Because I don't understand how it's possible that two of my favorite comic writers out there, Joss Whedon and Terry Moore, could make me so miserable writing these characters.
Really?
It is worse, in my
opinion. Worse than Joss's run?
Yes. And I can only imagine that just because, you know, I felt like I really got to know these very individual characters that, to me, had no need to be in the Marvel Universe whatsoever. There's been no value added by any kind of crossover I've read. They were...
Are you saying that the crossovers with Young Avengers haven't necessarily been great?
Or, I mean, Iron Man showing up. I mean, any of the stuff they've done. They did not need to exist in the Marvel Universe. They had very specific voices. They had specific ages and attitudes and arcs that they could go through as individuals. And that's been completely demolished by pulling in different writers and different voices and... They have no coherent timeline to me anymore, and I'm just really very disappointed that, like, what was for a while my very favorite comic has just
sunk so low.
Yeah.
Who was the original writer?
Brian K. Vaughan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
But
yeah.
It's, I don't think that these other writers are worse than him. I think they just, he's the only one who's gotten the voice of the characters that I believed, you know, that's the true
right.
voice.
Right, I mean, that's the, I mean, I think that's the big difference between... You know, something that you've created, you know, something that is an original work and something that is, you know, not a derivative work, but, you know, something you're taking over from someone else and just writing.
Well, and that's Kirkman's point, is that you can't necessarily give, you shouldn't be giving something that you don't own your full creative effort,
right,
necessarily.
Well, and Kirkman himself has made a point that he doesn't farm out his ideas to any other writers. You know, he is interested in telling these stories start to finish all by himself.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I feel like with some of the iconic characters, I mean, like the classic Marvel DC, I don't sweat it as much, you know, if their voices change, their perspectives change really drastically, because they are kind of bigger than life, and, you know...
What kind of comic fan are you, Florence? I mean, my God, when, you know, you change something like... Whether Peter Parker is married or not, you're supposed to demand that Marvel get down on their knees and grovel and apologize for making any kind of major change at all.
Yeah, God knows, after decade upon decade upon decade.
Or at least create a new universe.
Yeah,
so
there we go.
To explain it away.
I do wonder, there was a reason why Brian K. Vaughan left Runaways, and I don't remember what it was, but...
I don't think I ever knew.
It seems like he... Like, what is he doing right now?
Ex Machina?
Yeah. Where the fuck is that?
Oh, well...
If Brian K. Vaughan, if you're listening to this, get back to work!
He writes for
TV, the fuck are
though,
you doing?
He?
Really?
Doesn't
really?
He? I thought he wrote for, like, Grey's Anatomy or something like that.
I had not heard that.
That's bullshit. Doesn't he know that we want to read Ex Machina?
Is it on your pull list?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Are you just waiting for the next trade.
Waiting for the next trade.
We've been reading the trades.
We have been reading the trades. But I don't know. Are we caught up? I would totally read them in individual issues.
That's something for offline research.
But with individual issues, that you just said that you didn't care if you had to wait 6 months for a new trade.
I don't really care. But it's been a long time. It's been more than 6 months. It has definitely been more than 6 months, I think.
Yes, but the idea that
you don't
care
I don't know. Maybe, you know, if you're going to keep the price of comics, Marvel and DC comics, at $4 an issue now, still have them in more places than just the local comic shop. I mean, I think the source is great, but it's not a place where 12-year-olds are going to find comics.
Well,
you know,
and
put them in, have spinner racks in movie theaters, have spinner racks in maybe video game stores.
McDonald's!
You know, even...
yeah,
just
giveaways.
They were everywhere when I was 12. Everywhere.
And I have to say, I mean, the price to me is a very significant part of this conversation, because we have a nephew who's just turned 10, and we talked about giving him more comics for his birthday, and a lot of my hesitation is, that is an expensive habit to foist on his parents.
Yeah.
You know, if we did get him into it. Like, that,
I
don't think that that's, you know, any kid should need to have that much money spent just to keep him entertained every week.
Yep.
But,
well,
it's kind of the bang for the buck issue as well. I mean,
yeah.
Honestly, it doesn't take that long to read it.
Right, it's $4 for 10 minutes. And you're
and I honestly do think that is another thing that has changed since I was 12 with the whole decompressed storytelling, where things aren't just being written to be published in trades, but they're written for the trade as well.
They're written as if it's a chapter, not a full story in and of itself.
Exactly, and I'm not talking about a storyline that may go over continued issues, like in the X-Men and things like that, and where you would have the setup in one issue and the conclusion in the next issue, but you have the setup and then you have, you know, the six issues that get published in the trade, and if you don't have that trade, you get incredibly frustrated. Well, like Walking Dead issue 50.
Yeah.
If you didn't already have 51... how would you have felt about Walking Dead issue 50?
Well, actually, I thought that one ended.
You thought there was a decent ending?
Yeah, to issue 50.
Well, but I guess what I mean is nothing really happened in it.
Okay, I see your point. So it didn't leave me with a cliffhanger, but it didn't leave me feeling like I knew what happened to their entire story.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, Walking Dead in general, what I apparently have signed myself up for is a never-ending story.
But still, what I mean
column.
Is that each issue, each individual issue, is a snippet.
Yeah.
And they didn't used to be snippets either. And I'm not saying everything needs to go back the way it used to be, but I am saying that while I think comics are better now than they've ever been, I guess I'm not saying that individual comics are necessarily better now than they have ever been. And you said that, Marty, you said that why not focus on trades? Well, again, part of the argument is getting kids interested in comics to the point where they're buying them. Well, if a single comic is $3 or $4 and a trade of, you know, six collected comics is 20 or $25.
Well,
are
16.
Which ones are 16?
Almost all of them.
Ones are only 4 issues or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems like most of them.
But still, it basically is focusing on trades going to bring kids back to reading comics?
Well, I guess I don't know. I think that more people, you know, if more people buy trades and, you know, trades are more popular, that's my argument, really.
But,
it's not that kids are reading trades. I don't know.
But
as a kid, I probably would have been a lot more likely to read trades, but
single issues
I
do seem
really
so delicate. I mean, I think that's part of it too, is that it's turned into much more of a collectible culture rather than a culture of just, you know, reading something for pure entertainment. I think
if you look at the quality of the comics that come out now versus the quality of 20 years ago, I mean, we're getting what we're paying for.
That's true. We're getting gorgeous colors and very legible print. And
yeah.
Yeah. That is true. The production value, I think, is
very
satisfactory.
Again,
for
Marvel
us
and DC ones, I don't necessarily think that they need to be.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Again, if the target audience is a bunch of 30-something-year-old, you know,
who can afford it
and who are already passionate about it, they're doing a great job. Like, that was the start of his thesis, is that for us specifically, it's great right now.
Yep.
But that if anyone else is ever going to replenish.
Well, his whole thing about,
fanboys become old men, become dead men. Yeah.
And again, if there's not anybody to replace those,
right.
Yes, we'll still have Superman movies and we'll have
right, where
X-Men
is Superman?
Movies, but we won't have the Superman comics anymore.
Well, and
it'd
be
we'll have the properties, but we won't have the comics.
Right. It'd be interesting in 20 years if comics are all targeting 50-year-old fan geeks, you know?
Yeah.
Or if there's...
Oh, yeah. Can you even imagine
Is it really going to follow us personally, like, through our lives? That, you know, could kind of be awesome.
Well,
but
when I was talking about going to the source and picking up the comics and looking at the other people, you know, I did, when I was 15, by the time I got to 15... I did have a pull list at a comic shop, and I would go into my comic shop and get my comics each week on Wednesdays. And there were other kids, and it's like the 80s was almost the cutoff point for kids finding comics at the drugstore.
Mm.
And then going from there to the comic shop.
Yeah, I mean, in high school, for me, it was definitely the comic shop. I've never bought a comic anywhere else.
Well, by that time,
yeah,
they may have stopped.
Early 90s for me.
Yeah, they pretty much had stopped being in the drugstores by that point.
Yeah, although I couldn't afford them when I was in high school. I read my friends at the time, but I would go into the comic book shops with them.
Well, and, you know, all the libraries have very extensive graphic novel collections now. It's true.
Yeah, which they did
but
not then.
I wonder who's checking them out. I'm checking them out.
Yeah.
I'm going into
most
the
of them, really.
Teen section. Yeah. At any given time, I may have the majority of them out. But I'm going into the teen section of the library to get the graphic novels, get the, well, right now, the ultimate graphic novels I'm reading.
And there's like a, you know, a little, you know, there's a desk there and there's someone watching. And you always feel a little bit weird.
I do feel a little awkward going into the teen section to get these, but I don't want to have to reserve them and have them taken out of the teen section and taken to... I don't want to...
It takes more days.
Yeah, I don't want to take the extra days for them to travel. And, you know, I don't go into the teen section and hang out. I go in and I get the comics and I leave.
Although, of course, in the downtown library, I've been known to spend an entire afternoon in the young adult section, take a nap... No shame. I love their young adult room.
And they don't kick you out.
No, I used to go with Shelly when she lived here. We'd like make an afternoon of it. It was awesome.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's funny. I'm
well,
reading
you
a young adult
very
novel
youthful,
right now.
Yeah,
when
but
I,
it's by Cory Doctorow.
Yeah, it is by Cory Doctorow. When I walked in, though, to the last time I was at the library, I was picking that up, and I had it in my hand, and I went into the teen section to look at the comics. And the desk person said, "Oh, that's a really great novel."
Yeah. Well, and they don't like give me the stink eye when I go in. And
librarians
look.
Don't judge.
They don't, and it's frustrating. What I'm frustrated about is that I go in and I look at the graphic novels. I've never seen any of the teenagers that are hanging out there looking at the graphic novels.
Oh,
and,
I've seen it.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they have like the bean bags. Set up there, and I remember distinctly, actually, I think I was with you one time, and there were, like, three or four kids all sitting around reading, you know, X-Men or something.
Oh, were
it
they?
Was like, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Something.
Okay. All right.
Something totally Marvel or DC, I don't remember.
And, I mean, everyone says, well, you know, the 12 and 13-year-olds aren't reading X-Men right now, but they're reading manga, and so that's the new... That's basically going to be the new hook to get kids into comics is manga.
Yeah. I don't know. I think manga sucks.
I have to agree. Not on a totally philosophical level, but just my personal taste.
Has been one or two manga things.
There is some good stuff out there, but...
I actually really get annoyed when comics that I like that are, the more conventional style, suddenly get a writer and try to look more manga. Like, I hate it.
An artist to make it look more manga.
So,
how do writers make it look manga?
Yes, artist, I meant.
I have sitting on my shelf to read, which, there's a lot of stuff on my shelf to read.
Yes, there is.
All the entire Nausicaä Valley of the Wind series.
Yeah, you got those at the library.
At the library, yeah, they were selling them.
You bought those the same day that I bought all the Bone
trades.
Yeah.
Oh,
you did?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yep. Have you read Bone?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
How are you liking Russell, actually? I haven't asked you.
Well, I like the first two issues.
There hasn't been a third one to come out.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how often Bone came out, but my God.
I don't know either. I came to it after
someone. These drawings are not that complex. I mean,
how
Jeff,
long can
come
they
on.
Take? Did you read the Mark Millar
Kick-Ass
this week?
I stopped after two.
Oh, you've not read the other ones?
No, I haven't read three or four. Which one's out now?
After it's four, I think.
I haven't read three or four.
Yeah.
When two was like exactly like issue one.
Well, I won't buy them, but I admit to having stood in the comic shop this week and read the whole thing. This one was really good though.
The cover intrigued me with the two other superheroes.
Well, the third one ended with him fighting. I'm just gonna give it this spoiler alert. Okay, in the third one, like, he's, like, in this situation where he's clearly about to get the shit kicked out of him again.
Again.
Again. And he's, like, in, basically a gang lord's, apartment or whatever. And then all of a sudden this 10-year-old girl comes in with some, with swords and just slices everybody up, killing them left and right. That's how it ends. And... literally, like, chopping off limbs. Like, everyone's dead. And actually, that's how the fourth one starts, is her killing off everybody else who's in the room. Including, like, somebody who's basically, like, running away. And she's like, what, do you think you were going to get away? And, slices him down. Yeah. And,
holy crap!
And Kick-Ass is like, I'm on your side! Don't kill me! And she's like, yes, of course you are! Like, you inspired me, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe I'll have to look at those.
It's pretty kick-ass, actually. But also totally fucked up, and she's probably going to be a bad guy. That's my intuition.
There was a couple other things I saw at the source that I kind of wanted to look at, kind of wanted to read. But I don't remember what they were now.
Well, the fourth issue of two things came out this week. Actually, Kissy Blue came out last week.
Yeah.
And so I had read it before I went to the source this week. Maybe Necropolis also came out last week. Have you heard of this?
Narcopolis?
Yeah.
I have heard of it.
Do you know
anything about it.
Jamie Delano is?
Yeah, he wrote... He's written a bunch of horror comics. He wrote Hellblazer for a while.
Well, there's a bunch of, like, actual big name. I mean, I want to say he wrote X-Men, but maybe it's just because everyone wrote X-Men.
Yeah.
That's true.
But, I was looking him up, and he's got a huge,
I think one of the things that he's most famous for among people who like his writing is his run on Hellblazer.
Okay. Well, this is fucking awesome.
Really?
Yeah, and it's all done now. It's only four issues. But
is it creator-owned?
I have no idea. It's Avatar. So is Avatar... who knows anything about Avatar? Anyone?
I haven't heard of it.
I know that Warren Ellis writes for them.
Right, yeah. That's all I know as well. So
I would imagine that they're creator-owned. I mean, you have small presses like this, like Avatar. You're not going to have someone like Warren Ellis go to Avatar and say, oh yeah, you can own this.
Right, yeah.
You know, Black Summer? Sure. It's yours. Warren Ellis is not.
Yeah,
going
no,
to
you're
do
probably
that.
Right. No, totally. And I mean, they're doing some really, well, I say they're doing innovative things, but I'm really just I just mean that, you know, they're experimenting with web fiction and some other stuff. Have you seen I think it's DC has a whole site for web
Zuda.
Fiction. Zuda, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen
I'm
that.
About to write a Read Comics post about it. But, you vote on it.
Well, and Zuda has actually been a little controversial in that when you submit to Zuda, you don't own it.
Oh, seriously?
DC owns it.
Wow. But if you get on site at all, $500.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but
it's
again,
not
you're
bad,
doing your creation.
But if you are giving them the rights, yeah, that's
yeah.
fucked up.
Yeah.
That's totally fucked up. Yeah, okay,
I
didn't know that.
I think that if you even don't get on the site and you submit it,
what? No, they can't do that.
I don't know.
Really?
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
That,
I would be very surprised.
Look it up. When you do your review,
Look it up first. I'll look for some controversy.
Well, because part of it is the whole copyright issue, right? So once you've made them aware of an idea, if they ever do use it, then they could be liable to, like, pay for things if you aren't already implicitly handing over the idea. Like, they're in a difficult situation if they're even...
Yeah, that's why you, like, a lot of...
usually you sign, some kind of waiver thing to get around that. You just make people sign a thing.
Well, right, but is that thing, that waiver you're signing?
Because there's,
there's
so many writers and stuff who will not look at people's submissions.
Exactly.
Or not even submissions, but say...
they could be accused of
hey,
stealing the
could
idea
you,
later.
Read this and tell me what you think of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
20 years later they could say, you know, I sent them that idea that they've now made $1 billion on a new book on.
Yep,
yeah.
Exactly. And Marty has left the room and
yeah, I'm
all of a sudden I'm just like,
energy.
I don't know what really to talk about anymore. I'm almost caught up with all the Ultimate Universe
oh, wow.
stuff. You know, as far as that goes, I've enjoyed the Ultimate Universe stuff, and it's its own self-contained, and I can see where there's an argument for Marvel having set up this brand new universe with well-known characters and saying, okay, we're starting from day one,
mm-hmm.
but now the Ultimate Universe is almost 10 years old.
Really?
It has its own continuity. It started in 2000, I think.
I didn't know that.
Ultimate Spider-Man started in 2000, and it has its own continuity that has its own history and stuff. And so now it's probably getting to that point where new people coming into the Ultimate Comics, it's like, oh, do I want to read the Spider-Man comics that have the 10-year history or the Spider-Man comics that have the 40-year history?
Yeah, okay, I see your point.
Again, with the jumping on points, you know, it's like any comic.
Yep.
It should be a jumping on point. And by that, I don't mean that every single comic should spell things out for the reader.
Right.
It's just that every comic should be written well.
Yeah.
And if it's written well, people will enjoy it and want to read more.
Yep.
Full stop. I mean,
that's
how I felt about it when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, my literary tastes may be different now than they were when I was 12, but the comics, I feel they were written well, and while I didn't understand everything that was going on, I figured it out.
Yep.
And they were written well enough for me to want to keep reading and having the puzzle pieces fit in.
You know, and going back to the video game concept, video games are really freaking complicated. And they very rarely make a lot of linear sense when you're jumping into it. You just figure out these are the rules of this universe.
That's true. That's true. I mean, Final Fantasy, you know, each time you get a Final Fantasy, you get a little bit of the backstory and stuff, but are they continuous? I don't
fucked if I know. But in any case,
of course, I didn't even know that Halo had a backstory.
Yeah.
I thought it was just people shooting each other in hallways.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I mean, I think that the whole fundamental idea of complexity and suspension of disbelief, I mean, there's plenty of precedent for that in
yep.
kids' lives
yep.
right now.
But then you have, you know, it's almost like the editorial mandate is the same as studio executives for movies and television that are saying, oh, this is too complicated, audience aren't going to understand it from the first minute, and so we have to explain everything to them.
Yeah.
We have to dumb it down.
What I'm a little bit worried about in Kirkman's model is that it sounds a little bit too much like network television. The idea of play to the masses, no superstars, no, you know, really cool stuff. You can get that really cool stuff elsewhere. And what you're left with in the mainstream part, you know, you're shooting for the masses, is this desperation to hit more and more numbers, but not a lot of incentive to do quality.
Yeah.
You know, and then it missed the mark on both counts.
And I honestly think that so many people have forgotten, people who are writing comics now, who are in executive positions at the comic book companies, have forgotten what it was like when they were 12 and how they got into comics at that age. And I'm not saying that we have to completely recreate it, but, you know, certain analogous aspects, I think, need to be in place for there to be for millions of 12-year-olds to go after comics.
Yeah.
Now, of course, when I was 12, it was all boys, too. There were not girls reading comics.
Yeah. Well, and so why isn't there a push of, you know, bring your kids to your comic book shop?
Well, that's what Free Comic Book Day is supposed to be, I think.
Yeah.
But that's not what Free Comic Book Day has really turned into, either.
No. Well, and what I'm saying is, though, you know, if they're targeting people who are all about our age, there are a lot of people our age having kids, why isn't the push the, like, okay, you know, this is something you can share with your kids?
Well,
and again, that
is another aspect to it right there, where I think as a society, we overprotect kids too much.
Mm-hmm.
And this has actually been brought up in a couple of things, where there's a comic called Hackslash by Tim Seeley.
Okay.
And what it's about a girl who's, if I remember right, her father or mother, I think it was her mother, was a serial killer.
Mm.
A serial killer along the lines of your horror movie serial killer.
Okay.
And she has decided as her goal in life to hunt down other serial killers and take them out.
Okay, Dexter.
And all of them are very much written in the kind of slasher film-esque. You know, she's a funny hero. She's very Buffy-esque. And, you know, the villains are of the Jason, Mike Myers, Freddy variety. And she goes across the country to take these out. And her companion was someone who was thought to be a serial killer, who was very much in a kind of Jason mold, very hulking with a mask. But it turns out he's not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's her companion, and he goes with her to help her and stuff, and they go around and take out, and they, on another podcast, the creator, Tim Seeley, talked about how he was at a convention, and a young girl, like 14, 15, came up to get the comics autographed, and he's like, "You're reading this? Oh my god, you shouldn't be reading this," and again, you have this generation of adults who have kids who I think have forgotten what it was like when they were a teenager and how much you did as a teenager.
Crave that kind of graphic stuff.
Crave
yeah.
the horror films, crave that stuff, and also kept it a secret from your parents.
Yeah, good point, okay.
You know, how much did we do that we just never wanted our parents to find out about? And generally speaking, our parents probably didn't want to know.
Yeah.
You know, because then they'd have to do something about it, really.
Well, I have to say, my
and
mom,
as long as you weren't, you know, torturing small animals.
Yeah.
You know, if you're just hiding your, you know, if you're swiping your dad's Playboys as a 12-year-old, that was considered normal.
Yeah, see, when I did it, that wasn't as...
Well, yeah. But, you know, if you were sneaking out, if during a slumber party,
uh-huh.
you know, you're like, oh yeah, Mom and Dad, we're going to watch, you know, Finding Nemo, and you're really watching Slumber Party Massacre. You know, that was considered normal.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, everything has to be
supervised,
yes,
structured.
And, you know, we can't do anything that might harm our kids' psyches, and because of that, we have Marvel Adventures.
Yeah.
So that is kind of my feeling about how we have to trust. We should raise kids to be good kids, but also kind of give them more credit than we give them.
Yeah,
you know?
More privacy to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, once your son is spending a half an hour in the bathroom, you know, it's time to
make sure he's a lock on the door. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And not be concerned if he's reading a grown-up comic.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying, you know, he should be reading something with naked boobs. I mean, that's superhero
I'd
comics.
I'd rather
but,
that than
but, well, not
stuff.
Even the violent stuff, you know? I mean, again, I think video games have pushed it so far in parents' faces that now they have to do something about it, you know? And whereas when I was reading, what would I have been reading that would have been considered, Sandman even.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the horror comics of today, there were horror comics back then,
mm-hmm.
and we...
Well, Stephen King.
Stephen King. I had plenty of friends who at 13 were reading Stephen King. And
he couldn't have gotten the sales he's gotten if it weren't for the young teenage set, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So... I don't know. I think we might end up signing off without Marty because he left a little bit ago. And
that's fine. He'll join us next time.
Yep. Well,
the next installment.
I hope that, you know, this was at least an entertaining episode where I got all, Marty's back right as we're about to sign off.
Yay.
Okay,
we're
going to sign off without you, actually.
Fuck you guys.
All right. Well, this is Jason.
Florence.
I'm not here.
Okay.
Bye!
Bye!
Bye.
You just hit it again.